By the way,
I am retard. Coin Father is here. We are going live on Twitter Spaces. I should probably get
nice.
Well, you guys need a little music.
Always.
Well, you know,
I like YouTube music. Yeah.
Music, won't they?
Yeah, YouTube might.
YouTube probably will slaughter you for that if you play more than like 10 or 15 seconds.
We're not going to do that. We will go ahead and hook up Spaces though. Let's see.
We haven't had an issue with playing Fortunate Son though, have we? Then again, maybe it's because we're talking over it.
Yeah, I think because we're all talking over it, it didn't happen. But
we fuck up the algorithm.
Well, I mean, if talking over it saves us from that, then we might as well just keep talking over it.
Me and Michael just have to take one for the team.
Oh man, we have to get long-winded again.
Darn. By the way, Mike, are you somewhere different or did you just move your location?
Both? No, I'm somewhere different.
Oh, okay. Both?
His girlfriend is helping him with his resume.
No, it's definitely not that. I can tell you that. No offense to her, but it's definitely
I don't know what to think now without like seeing your fridge behind you.
What are you trying to say, dude?
Dude, I got a fucking plant, and like I had to angle it away from the pictures of my
You can say that you don't like looking at my kitchen. That's fine.
I love looking at it.
I actually back at my place, I did change up the layout a little bit so you guys weren't staring into my kitchen when we were recording. So it's now more, it's like the living room. What I need to do is move my painting from the wall over my desktop so you guys have the painting to look at behind when I'm normally recording.
I like that painting. Just take that one with you.
I'll make sure to tell her that. The guys like your painting.
Did she paint it?
No.
I don't like it anymore.
You could have said yes, man. We would have believed it.
Yeah. I would have literally have no way of proving it.
I should have said that. I'm a really bad liar, guys. Okay.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well.
That was a lie.
Really most business people would disagree with you on that one.
Most lizards would definitely disagree with you on that.
Lizard people, business people.
I didn't realize.
Little column A, little column B.
I didn't realize what a big difference the headphone, like good headphones, make.
Yeah.
All the things I can hear now, and I'm like, oh.
And a good microphone. Like it's.
Yeah.
Well, and for me, good lighting, because now it doesn't look like my face is glowing red like it normally does when we're recording.
We just thought you were like really pissed off.
Filled with murderous rage.
I mean, there is that, fellas. You didn't know me in a past life, but I do have the angry nerve, that's for sure. I'm trying to channel my inner Bill Burr. He's now a lot more calm than he used to be.
Yeah, well, he's permanently fired.
John said he's back, but I guess he's waiting on Shane.
Yeah. Let's see. I don't know if John can hear us. We'll get you in a second, John.
Yeah, he can. He should be able to hear all this.
He can hear everything when he's backstage.
Well, he's in the green room. Enjoy the drinks we put out for you, John. Have as many as you want. It's all yours.
On the house.
Virtual drinks.
No, they're real drinks. It's just I think he bought them. Drinking hurricane right now. I don't know if that's literal or figurative.
Those are actual drinks. They're rum drinks and they're very, very good.
Yeah. I just don't know if he means the actual drink or is he like did his roof just like cave in and he is getting poured on right now?
Well, speaking of that, since we don't have anything to talk about, have you guys been like tracking that at all this morning and last night?
Yeah, it crossed my path of travel, which is the reason I'm here instead of in Florida right now.
So wait, do you have like a bunch of moving stuff like with you at Shane's place?
So there's a moving truck that is either in Florida now or on its way. And we have multiple vehicles here and we have a big horse trailer that we're pulling.
The convoy is there.
The convoy is here. Yeah, we detoured to hang out with Shane and avoid hurricanes.
John, welcome in. Your picture looks a lot better too.
Solid.
Okay, good. Can you hear me okay? No issues?
Perfect. Yeah, man. Much
I can almost make out what temperature it is in the room with you.
Oh, that's good. Is it showing? Is that cold or?
No, the thermostat behind you.
Of course.
I was just giving.
Yes, John. No, Jordan was absolutely looking at your nipples. That's exactly.
What there you go.
Yeah, if they were up a little higher.
Yeah. Nice recovery, Jordan.
No, that's not what I'm looking at.
Go lower, Gabe.
Eyes are up here, guys. Faces up here.
Oh, man.
Welcome to the shit show, John.
Yeah, going to be one of those.
And thank you, listeners, and welcome to America's Armed Forces.
My father out there.
In the house.
Got the, the I am retard going. Garrick Wilson.
James Wilson. Garrick Wilson.
Guys, thanks for being out there. We got Slick, we got Mickey, we got Immutable out there listening on Twitter Spaces. Guys, kind of an introduction. We've got John Frankman, a former Green Beret, and he's with us tonight. So if you guys are going to have questions and you want to go ahead and request to speak and all that fun stuff, go ahead. You can do it anytime. And we'll just keep going from here, and we'll do the introduction here in a minute. But that's kind of the wherewithal for tonight. We can bring up anything you guys want at the same time. That's good with you guys.
You might also want to cover the other elephant in the room. That is the elephant that's in the room with you.
Oh yeah. Alex is back, guys.
That is not nice.
Yeah.
By the way,
he has not this little thing down here. Jordan. That is so rude.
It says, what is it? This says Shane Hazel, right in front of me. That's I'm not.
It's a general.
Me no Shane, me Alex.
I'll point that out every 15 minutes to everybody. If you're wondering who this guy in the studio is, this is Alex Danza. He's been on hiatus for 2 weeks, and he's back.
It's good to have you back.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, now, Jordan was particularly heartbroken.
I was.
It's pretty bad.
He DM'd me a lot. Okay.
It's a good thing we actually kept him away from the liquor. It would have gotten a lot worse.
Yeah.
Much.
Yes. All right, guys. We are ready to go. Ready to kick it. Stand by. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans, everybody. My name is Shane Hazel. I am joined by Mike Hobart, Jordan, Gabe, in the studio, the return of the one and only Alex Stanzik, and our guest tonight is John Frankman, a former Green Beret, did some fighting of some really shitty tyranny from the DOD. We're going to hear that story and everything else tonight. Jordan, first and foremost, how did you stumble across Mr. John Frankman, this great American?
Man, I don't know if I saw it on my own on Twitter or if somebody shared it with me. And if you shared it with me, thank you. But yeah, I came across this article, and the funny thing is, I was in Florida at the time, and it was a southwestern Florida newspaper or something. And I just read this article, and I was like, wow, this is just an awesome story, especially because like me and John were both Green Berets, we were captains. So I understood very intimately the position that he was put in. And I mean, I think anybody who read that article or listens to his story today will be very moved by it. But it really touched me because I understood some of the sacrifices that he made and that his team had to make to push back for what they believed in. And it was so motivating. I was like, who is this guy? Let me find him on Twitter, and was able to reach out. We started talking right away, and we've had to do some logistical work to get him on. He's a very busy man right now. Everybody wants him, but you know what? He's here right now, and we've got him. And I can't wait to kind of hear his story from his mouth. I've heard his words on paper or written down, but I can't wait to hear your story, John.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan. Yeah, and I remember, I think you reached out on Twitter, and it was really shortly after my article was put in the Floridian, and it was just such a crazy time. It didn't get published until July 31st. I'd been trying to get the story out since late June, and it was with the help of Matt Gaetz's office that it was finally able to get out, and just since it got published, was hit up by you guys, a bunch of others, so I've been able to get on about 10 interviews or so far. And really, my goal right now is to raise awareness on the problems with the military vaccine mandate. Let people know that it's illegal, it's immoral, it's not good for your health. And so hopefully, and it's crazy that round two is coming. I mean, that's absolute insanity that we haven't learned from it. So just trying to share as much as I can. So appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity as well. And hopefully I can learn about Bitcoin too.
Yeah. Hey, and I'll go ahead and ask kind of some of the first pertinent questions is, you're separated now from the military, correct?
I am, yes.
Okay. For anybody who's listening, because we do have people out here in the audience that obviously aren't veterans, don't know the first thing about Green Berets, their mission, as people are coming into the space, you know, I know Jordan's talked about it a little bit, but as people are coming into the space, which is more and more all the time, kind of give us a sense what the, you know, Green Berets go through to become Green Berets, the sacrifice, the two-time volunteer, the extra schools, you know, all the whole thing, so that people kind of understand your devotion to, I think, you know, the people of America.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm an officer, or was an officer, was a captain. And as far as becoming a Green Beret, if you're an officer, you have to go through selection at a certain time. So it's when you're promotable to captain and you apply to go to selection, then you go to selection, and that's a three-week long Special Forces Assessment selection tryout, where the first week is just, that's gate week, doing a lot of physical gates with regards to runs, rucks, IQ tests, personality tests, language aptitude tests. So they're really trying to figure you out. A bunch of land nav the next week. After that, you kind of lift. In team week, you're lifting more weight than you ever thought possible. And that's just 4 days long. And yeah, I mean, it's intense. And I guess for people who don't quite know how difficult it is, maybe just to put in perspective, if you've ever worked out to the point where you start smelling ammonia because you're burning your muscle, I mean, that's kind of like where you get to. Similarly, if you've ever kind of walked and continued moving and working until you start falling asleep, kind of walking. I guess that was more Ranger School than it was assessment and selection, but kind of along those lines. So that's what you do just to try out. Then you have to PCS and go to Fort Bragg to go through the Special Forces Qualification Course. So as an officer, I went into the Special Operations Forces Captain's Career Course, which is a few months long. And it all in all, it was two years of total training. So doing that, doing small unit tactics, going through survival, evasion, resistance, and escape, where they literally put you into like a pretend prisoner camp and put you through some of the things that you don't want to happen to you if you end up behind enemy lines. Going to the 18 Alpha course, learning a lot about foreign internal defense, unconventional warfare. And then the culminating exercise is Robin Sage, where you basically pretend that the state of Virginia invaded the state of North Carolina and you're allies with like the state of South Carolina. And you're trying to basically conduct an unconventional warfare campaign. And unconventional warfare and foreign internal defense, that's kind of the bread and butter of the Green Berets. It's working by, with, and through a partner force. So at the end of all of our training, we had 6 months of language training. So I had training in Spanish. I'm down here at 7 Special Forces Group. So you're doing Robin Sage, you're going through that whole unconventional warfare exercise, and that's activities taken to coerce, disrupt, or overthrow an occupying power or government by use of an auxiliary, underground, guerrilla force. So really solid training. And I mean, just think about it, 2 years of that. And it's not necessarily the best move career-wise, because you just went from, so I was an entry officer beforehand, you're going from that group where maybe you're at the top of your class to now in Special Forces, where it's a lot more cutthroat, trying to get that sort of higher rank among all these sort of alpha dudes who've chosen to then go into Special Forces. So you're doing a lot in order to deploy, get missions. I was also able to go to Military Freefall School before PCSing to 7th Group. So all in all, that was about 2 years of training. So I would just say, if people are wondering what SF do, I mean, it's a huge mission set. Usually working by, with, and through the partner force. And that's why we have that language training. That's why the active duty groups are broken up based on the different continents and regions. So my group focused on Central and South America. That's why we learn Spanish. Another group focuses on Europe. They learn Russian, China, and different Chinese countries. They learn Chinese, whatever the language is. So that's kind of how that works.
I think it's probably a pretty concise breakdown. I mean, just a few.
Not bad enough.
So I guess the next question is, where did it all go wrong?
Well,
just fast forward to the good stuff.
I mean, it depends where you want to start. You can go way back, but
I think, well, I mean, you know, historically speaking, I guess we'll probably get into some of that stuff in terms of how it goes really wrong with the command structure and those who are pushing the command structure for, you know, certain prerogatives that they're trying to accomplish. You know, we're going to get into, you know, fiat and how Bitcoin solves a lot of that in terms of positive incentive structure. But more or less, I'm really curious. I was looking through some of the interviews you had done and just kind of taken with what you guys went through when October of 2021 came around.
Sure.
And they wanted to take everything that, you know, two-time volunteers that have put themselves through hell and back, you know, have disciplined themselves, their minds, their body, and everything else, and said, hey, you know what, we've got this thing here for you, and you're going to have to take it or you're gone.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll run through the kind of story where I see it starting. That started, got a team September of 2021, great team, and just awesome guys, love the NCOs and team, love the warrant I had as well. And we were just very open in communication with each other, and we were tracking that, okay, there's this shot coming out, but we don't know if we necessarily want it. Why do we need it? We've already had COVID. Seems like natural immunity works. And I'm Catholic, and my concern was the aborted fetal cell piece that was being used. So at first I was like, hey, as far as Catholic morality goes, I can't take this unless there's like a grave reason to take it. And all of my guys were concerned because we understood the difference between emergency use authorization, which means that it can't be forced on you, which means that the drug company has no liability. So there's just no incentive, all a risk on your side, none on theirs. So the guys were just concerned, if they get jacked up, are they going to be covered? But I told the guys that as your senior raider, I'm not going to punish or reward you based on whether you get this shot or not. I personally don't want to get it. And that was actually the policy before the mandate came out in August of 21, which was actually illegal, the policy, the way it was structured. But that's at least the stance that I took. And I told my team, you know, we might take some shit for it, but, you know, whatever. I'll take it. And we did take shit for it. My team started, and he got reamed like a few times a week. He'd go in Sergeant Major's office. He'd just yell at him and, you know, whatever. And, you know, talking to me at one point in time too. And I was trying to play kind of coy. The ops sergeant, he was saying, Hey sir, there's this mission. Your team might be able to get it if y'all are able to get the shot. And I'm like, oh, I just don't think I can get the guys to get it in time. Shucks, that sucks. And, you know, Sergeant Major tried to call me on it. He's like, hey, sir, you're fucking up. I'm like, yeah, you're fucking up. You're fucking up your career. You should really consider, you know, doing this. You need to look for work outside the Army. Like, if your team, if they lose a mission because of their vaccine status, I'm going to kick them out of the company. I'm going to kick them off the team. I'm going to send them to SWCC. That's not a threat. That's a promise. And I kept telling
them. Over an inoculation that doesn't work.
Well, and real quick, just quick interjection. When he says SWCC, that's like the training. So the training he talked about, you go back to be an instructor, and nobody wants those jobs. Like, you want to stay in group. You want to stay where the fight is. So that's kind of almost seen as a punishment, is getting sent back to SWCC.
And the threat is really kind of interesting too, right? Is like, listen, if you're not inoculated, I'm going to use quotes here. If you're not inoculated, you can't go do really dangerous shit where you might die. That is the worst.
Well, so the irony continues. I mean, it continued because it was June of 21 when we were out in Archangel, which is a military free fall training exercise. And we were like in the second weeks of doing night jumps. So jumping out of planes at 14,000 feet with oxygen and equipment at night with nods. And, you know, I'll just own it. I didn't have the best exit. Sorry. not necessarily what's expected of the captain. You know, my team sergeant's like, you have a good exit there. I'm like, I don't know. But anyway, that's when first
Shane's a Halo instructor, by the way, too. So he's really
Shane. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, so you I'll talk to you later. You probably know my team star then. He was at MFFI as well. But we were out there, and yeah, first SFC changed the policy. You needed to be jabbed in order to go overseas and deploy. And we had a J set pending for August to a Central American country. And because it was a requirement then in order to be jabbed in order to deploy, I had talked to my team and asked them, hey, what do you guys want to do? And just if the individuals wanted to get it, they could. And I only had one guy who did want to. And so when talked to the company commander, he's like, hey, John, I know your team doesn't want to get the shot, but what's it going to be? Are you guys going to get the shot? Or are we going to have to take the mission? I said, well, sir, I only have one guy who wants to get it. So I guess you got to take the mission. Not sure if that's what he was expecting. and then I asked him, but are you willing to accept natural immunity? That is, unless you're willing to accept natural immunity, because I'd have COVID. I'd been to LabCorp to get my blood work done. A number of other guys had gotten their blood work done at LabCorp. So we would have had the minimum manning requirement based on natural immunity if you go down there. And I was told, no, we're not willing to accept that risk. So as far as the irony is
risk,
like you're not, that's, you know, you sure about, like, that's the risk you're not willing to accept is sending us to, I mean, I guess to be fair, the best explanation I can think of is if they were concerned that the country was going to change the rule later on, or it was going to be some kind of a requirement. But I think as a force provider, which is what group is, versus, you know, if that's what the TSOCs, the main command components that are sending you to those other countries are requiring, like, that's on them. But as long as it's your free legal right to not get it, like, that's how it should be. So,
yeah.
And to explain what John mentioned, that the mission that they would have gotten was a JSET, and that's a joint combined exercise for training. And what that's basically, like, short of a combat deployment, that's about as that's one of the best missions you can get, because you're going and you're working with a partner force. You're, like, using the language. Technically, like, 51% of your training is supposed to be actually the special forces team getting the training, but you're there helping out another country's military. Right. It's one of the best, like Robin Sage that he talked about earlier is a really great training exercise, but these JSETs are mm-hmm. so important for teaching the team how to operate before they really get into a combat situation doing the same thing. So to risk giving up and losing a mission like that is a really big deal. And as he pointed out earlier, you know, when you leave the infantry and you're one of the top performers there, if you weren't, you wouldn't have even gotten selected to go to selection. You're giving that up to go compete against some of the best guys in the Army. And so you are taking a little bit of a risk. And that, so there's already this, you know, we talk a lot about, like, the deep state or the managerial class, and this right. is kind of part of it. Like, this is how they get the managers of the empire motivated to go out and do their bidding, right? Because, like, oh, you want to keep progressing in this career path, then you got to do what we say. Mm-hmm. So I want to emphasize that point as he continues to, like, tell his story of, like, what he was giving up and how many other people in his same shoes very easily roll. And there could have been other guys that pushed back too. I don't want to, like, shit on everybody, but sure. how easy it was, especially for an officer and senior enlisted guys, to roll over and go with the programming because they want their career. They want their pension down the road.
Well, it was really funny too, also handing off the mission to the other team, because they came in and kind of, Van Wert and I briefed them on everything that we had already discovered during the pre-deployment site survey. And at the end, they're like, oh, we really respect what you guys were doing. And I'm thinking, like, well, then why'd you go and get the shot?
Yeah.
That's actually what I was wondering, John, was what was the general reaction as far as you saw it from your peers in similar positions that you were in?
So I think a lot of the other kind of NCOs had respect for it. A lot of the other kind of team guys, some other folks were kind of surprised, like, you know, why are you doing this? Why don't you just kind of go with it? I felt pretty isolated though. So we were trying to, you know, very much within the team, and mm-hmm. different folks. So I think the op sergeant major, he was super respectful and came and asked, like, you guys know what you're doing? He's like, okay, just stay together. Like, okay. And it already had been. Oh, go ahead.
Were you guys the only group that was basically saying, no, we ain't doing this?
The only team that I know of, yeah, that did that. I mean, I don't know of, and I actually, when people came to SWIC, so from instructors came from RAG, and I told them, yeah, our team lost a J set. They were like, oh, you were that team. So I'm like, yeah, we were that team. So I think it had been heard of to some extent. But yeah, because we were 10 of 12 not jabbed by the time the mandate came out. And that's what a lot of people need to understand is the pressure that the government, that Biden administration and Lloyd Austin and all of the generals and everybody down to all of the yes men who didn't think critically at all, like the pressure that was put on individuals, like 90-95% of the military was already fully jabbed before it was mandatory. And it's just insane because right when it rolled out, you had maybe 20% of folks just signing up to get it. So when the signups went out, I saw I was the only officer in the company who didn't sign up. I'm like, well, shit, this should be interesting. Mm-hmm. all right.
Well,
I'm curious about something. Sorry. I was hearing some stories about guys that were basically being threatened with dishonorables if they didn't get the jab. Did you hear anything about that? Do you know anything about that?
So not within my unit, and I will give kudos to my leadership to the extent that I think that they did what they felt was within their power to do. And as far as helping me out, like they didn't, even when I got kicked off taken off the team early, I still got a good OER, could have made major, but yeah, that was happening at different units. So I heard, for instance, at the 82nd, there was a battalion sergeant major who before PT separated folks and said, hey, if you've had the vaccine, go over there. You guys have the day off. If not, get your rucksacks on. We're going for ruck march. Yeah. And unless you want to go sign up and get the shot. And this is to privates who don't know any better, 25 and unders, lieutenants who just like, they don't want to make a bad first impression. So it's just terrible. And I had a buddy who was in the Coast Guard. He wasn't allowed to leave his ship to even go to church. I mean, the level of coercion, I didn't have it that bad. Like I'm here and I'm speaking on behalf of others just because I have that position, but I truly didn't have it as bad as a lot of others did.
So I know somebody very, very close to me. I'm not going to say who he is, but he's very close to me. And he got threatened with a dishonorable if he didn't get the shot.
Yeah.
And I saw an article in the last few days of like particularly talking about that topic where apparently there are individuals that did get dishonorables and now they're trying to take, I think they're trying to take DOD to court because they can't get a job now.
So the majority of the individuals who were kicked out because of the mandate, they did not get honorables. They got generals under honorable or generals under dishonorable. So to get a dishonorable, you'd have to go to a military tribunal. So you could have, let's say, said, hey, we're kicking you out. You're getting a general. You'd be like, I'll see you in court and take it to trial. But if that goes poorly for you, then it could go to the dishonorable. Yeah. So that's kind of... So when I chose to leave, and I know I'm jumping like a year ahead now in the story, when I chose to leave, part of that was so that I could maintain my honorable and not be worried about like beat the army into leaving before they could kick me out and would absolutely have rejected my religious exemption. You know, it doesn't matter. I was in seminary for 4 years studying to be a priest. It, like, who cares? You know,
there's also something I wanted to just briefly touch on. Shane, if you wanted to touch on this later, by all means, like we could do it later. But like the real impact and import of like what specifically John just went down as far as like 90% of the military already like being pressured and mandate, or I mean, not mandated, but being pressured into it before it was mandated by the state. And then also like with this whole UCMJ aspect of it, with like the dishonorable discharge, like people that aren't in the military or aren't veterans probably don't understand or don't like fully accept that the military is supposed to be its own separate government, right? And when we've got like our military passing down this kind of pressure onto their soldiers, ignoring the fact that it was a freaking inoculation that doesn't work, but they're like passing down this kind of like concerted effort and using the military first in order to like really apply pressure to the rest of the populace. Like it's just like it's a melding of the different branches that should like ignore, like it's supposed to be executive, legislative, and judicial, and then the military is its like own fourth like government essentially. But like, dude, like I had no idea that the pressure was that bad. Yeah. Because like my contract ended in 2020.
Well, and let's put this in perspective for everybody that's out there too, because Mike, we had some conversations with some guys over the weekend. We were out at BitBlock Boom in Austin, Texas. Yeah. And veterans will do what veterans do. They talk shop and, you know, kind of wreck people's day and can be a real party killer. And we did that to one guy, you know, without even trying is how good, Dr. Doom and I are. So when we were talking about this, you know, it was a broader conversation about what has been going on internally to the DOD to really take the strength out of it. We talked from everything from, you know, some of my guys that are like kind of the OG thugs that have, you know, tattoos all the way down to their wrist. And, you know, when that came around, some of these guys had, you know, 12, 13, 14 deployments. And they were like, hey, you know what? No thanks anymore. We appreciate your service. See you later. You're not going to get, you know, chosen or selected for, you know, moving up in the chain of command. And it was kind of this pattern where a lot of the guys, you know, had, you know, tons of sleeves and really knew, small unit type of tactics and all that kind of stuff. We'll just leave it there. Right. So, you know, the broader picture here is when a lot of these guys ran in after 9/11. To 2000, you know, 9/11 and 2001, they were getting set to retire. I mean, literally, if you went in, you know, right after 9/11, September, mm-hmm. October, November, you know, or even in the following months, you were looking at fast forwarding 20 years to 2021, October, when the shots were, you know, rolling out and mandated. So you've got guys at the end of their, you know, entire military career was sometimes 14, 15 deployments that had seen, you know, just the most heinous horrors that war could possibly imagine. And those are the guys that you're giving this choice to. Either you take this unproven inoculation or maybe figure it out on the outside. We don't really give a damn about the service that you've given for the past almost 20 years.
You're gonna lose your entire
That's what I was going to say is you lose your pension.
Yeah,
talking about criminality.
Yeah,
adult life.
Well, and not only what it does to the, not only what it takes away from those highly experienced service members, but also look at the knowledge drain that occurs within our military.
Yeah,
from those real world experiences that they pass down. I mean, because that's, you know, those were the best NCOs that I had when I was in, where, you know, the people that had the experience.
And the impacts on the family.
That's not talked about
enough. You lose your pension or you lose your retirement that way, then you're basically starting from zero after you've given all those years and all those deployments and all that sacrifice to your country. It's like, thanks, water, cheese later, bro.
Yeah. Good luck. And what do you do when you get out? Because if you got it other than honorable or possibly a dishonorable, you might as well be a felon. And at that point,
it's the equivalent of, for those of you who don't know what that means, a dishonorable discharge is the equivalent on your record, and it stays with you forever, basically, of being convicted of a felony as a civilian. So it makes life especially difficult. So the guys that got threatened with that, I mean, John made a really good point, like whether, you know, you actually go up to an administrative or whatever you call it proceeding to where they can actually hit you with that or not. There's going to be a lot of guys that wouldn't know any better. Like they wouldn't even know that was the pathway. And if they just even there was a rumor that you might get a dishonorable, that would be enough for a lot of guys, you know?
Yeah.
A felony or I get a shot.
Go ahead.
No, you go, John.
I was going to say that just on the medical side, on the legal side, just some major, major failures in not allowing service members to know what their actual rights are. And I was reaching out to legal assistance to try to figure out, well, what exactly am I allowed to do? Talking to other JAGs who thought that this was illegal in order to get information from them. And the doctors aren't talking about informed consent. And I don't know if you guys have heard of Doc Pete Chambers, but he was a Green Beret. And then he was a doctor and he actually briefed a bunch of his service members about informed consent. And I think only like six or something of them decided to get it. But it's kind of like my team. I told my team I wouldn't punish or reward them based on whether they got it, and they were 10 and 12 not jabbed. Well, I think if we had explained what informed consent was, explained the benefits of the shot, none, the negatives of the shot, death, you know, guys might have chosen differently. So, yeah.
And the thing that blows my mind, you know, like when I asked you the question, John, about like how many other guys or how many other units basically said no, like my understanding of Green Berets from the guys that I've met and known is that you guys think way outside the box. Like you're all basically a bunch of freaks or you wouldn't get the job. Mm-hmm. And it surprised me that there weren't more guys thinking like that. And you got to start asking questions. It's like, okay, look, state of emergency, the pharmaceutical companies have complete immunity from prosecution.
Yeah.
It's like, this starts to, you got to start connecting some dots here. Like what's up with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And although I think that just about every kind of officer within the military and leader failed insofar as they didn't give it second pause to consider the health effects for themselves, for their men, the legality of it. And there were enough people warning them. Maybe I could have been more vocal in warning leadership. I don't know. I was mostly just worried about the guys and not trying to create a huge battle, but there was enough that people should have just had some pause. And it's just also wild too, to see leaders knowing everything about what's happening in Colombia and Venezuela, about different country plans, things like that, saying, oh, it's going to be bad for Colombia. They have a communist president now, and just not really looking at, you know, what the hell's happening in the back door, or just understanding how unconventional warfare works. And you would go about overthrowing a government, but not looking at kind of what's going on back
door.
By
God, we got to stop this tyranny in these third world countries so that tyranny in our first world country can keep going.
It's that whole North Korea meme, right? And then everybody knows in a tyrannical country, you get just one choice for leader. In a free republic like the United States, you get at least two, right? Like,
and I'll tie it back to Bitcoin now. Be the first one to do that. But Nayib Bukele of El Salvador, who was highly pushing for Bitcoin, he sent some funny tweets off about, you know, what would happen in my country, what just happened in the U.S., I think with maybe some Trump indictments, things like that. So anyway.
So one of the most egregious parts of the story that you haven't touched on yet, and I hope you will for a few seconds anyway, is the fact that they asked you to get take a marking, whether it was I don't want to butcher this.
Sure, yeah, you're good.
Sure, this, because I think this is just right up there.
Please
with
tell me you're meaning a barcode.
Those guys in Germany that, you know, did some stuff back in, I don't know, the late 30s, 1930s at that.
Marking.
Yeah. So no, I'll keep going. So we lost the J set. We came back. The team was thrown into this company validation exercise or training exercise where my team sergeant and I were very concerned that we were thrown in it to basically get fired because they couldn't fire us outright for the shot, but we ended up doing pretty well there. And I don't think that was exactly what it was. And then we were sent to the Joint Readiness Training Center, which we think was probably a punishment by the Sergeant Major being upset we lost the JSET. So there we were in Louisiana. And one of the requirements they had was to, I mean, everybody's about mitigating the stupidest risk. So in order to mitigate the risk of people who are not vaccinated, you need to mark them. So they need to wear different wristbands in order to indicate whether they received a shot or not.
Bro. Wow.
They need to put red. You're in the middle of the woods. And especially as a special forces detachment that is, you know, operating behind enemy lines, conducting unconventional warfare or irregular warfare, whatever you want to call it. We're supposed to have red tape around our field litter carries, our gear. So and then the vaccinated have like green tape or something like that.
Dude, are you fucking kidding me?
So you get a special star that you get to wear.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, another team, they like saw the irony of it. So they made us some stars, but
no,
that's awesome.
Shout out to that team. At least they understood what was going on.
Yeah.
Military brat.
They respected us though. Like a lot of groups are like, dude, respect where you guys are at. Good for y'all. But yeah, so we had to like wear this different marking, but I mean, I never did. And Team Sergeant and I, we were just like, not going to happen. Like if that happens, we're going to file EO. We're going to file sharp, whatever we got to do. It's just not going to happen.
Do all of it.
And I mean,
you know what's crazy is like, if I was interjected into a training exercise like that, knowing what I now know, I would be looking for the guys with the red tape, be like, you're some outside the box thinking motherfuckers. Hey, let me partner up with you.
Yeah.
Cause you don't just go along with the flow. I bet if you were to stack up the red teams versus the green teams, the red teams would probably outperform just because
send them on a run for long enough and half keel over.
Oh yeah, there you go. Attack. Yeah,
myocarditis.
Fucking dudes dropping out of formation with heart attacks.
What's the thing in Band of Brothers? Kirihi. Like, just send them on Kirihi. We'll watch them all keel over, and the ones that make it to the top are the ones that probably weren't meant to.
I think we should have spaghetti today before we go on our run.
Did you guys hear about that one Army pilot that died on the stick?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's jacked
up. The first one ever to die at the stick in a training environment.
In the history of Army aviation.
At Fort Rucker in training. Yeah. They brought him back.
Yeah, he was revived, yes.
Yeah. But he did technically die, yeah.
And you guys follow 18 minutes. Do you guys follow Terminal CWO?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's solid. Sam Shoemate puts out a lot of this good information. So definitely follow him because there's various kind of weird things, and especially with the DMED data, Department of Medical Database data kind of being skewed. Right. I mean, we got a lot to go through, but anyway. Yeah, so we had kind of that segregation happening at Fort Polk for a Joint Readiness Training Center. And then the thing that boiled my blood the most was when you're there for 2 weeks in the box doing an exercise, and then you have a 12-hour break. And so the mandate went into effect August of 21. We're there September of 21. We don't need to be fully jabbed until November, according to order or something like that. But we get counseled in the middle of the woods, like during our 12-hour break, and not by our company commander. They send the major who we're attached to, and just the team's livid, and they're asking some great questions like, do you like being lied to?
Nice.
It's pretty fun. Because we all knew that it was EUA as well. I mean, that wasn't that hard to figure out. And this is where everyone really needs to just open their eyes and understand that this is totally illegal. It's going to be illegal again. There is no available FDA approved shot. Mm-hmm. The drug company has no liability. This is just it's not good for you. They're not tracking doing anything to track injuries. It's just so problematic. So we're in the middle of the woods. We get counseled. I just get my company commander on the phone because I brought it in the box. And I ask him, sir, why are we getting counseled in the middle of the woods? How do you expect my guys to make a career decision, life decision, without the proper medical, religious, or legal resources? How am I supposed to show them that training to fight and win wars is more important than administrative bullshit when this is happening? And
kind of the point,
like, we're just not going to get any training value if this is hanging over our heads.
Yeah.
And up until then, we were doing really well, but we just fell off the cliff after that. Just the motivation was just.
Yeah. And just to bring some context to anybody who's out there that hasn't served in the military, this type of, I guess, resistance to something that is happening within the military is the amount of pressure is going to be amplified compared to what happens as a civilian. I mean, even, you know, out here when all this was going on, people were lining up, you know, they had this whole war against the unvaccinated and this, you know, this persecution that was taking place. But the culture in the military is one that, you know, when you go through basic training, you literally, you know, stand in a line and you walk through this gauntlet of injections. And so part of the whole entire process of becoming militarized is getting injected with all kinds of stuff. You don't know what it is. You just know that you're supposed to do it. You stand in line and you get it done. And so you're already taught from the very beginning that, okay, we're going to do things to you. And it doesn't matter what you know about it or what you think it is or anything like that. And on top of that, there's a mindset of wanting to avoid being what is known as a blue falcon. Okay. And so when they start handing out mass punishments for things like these group counselings and all the, you know, and putting pressure on individuals out there, there's also pressure coming from all sides, from your peers, to not mess it up for everybody else. and to be a Blue Falcon, buddy fucker.
Gabe, but, for the unindoctrinated, what exactly is a Blue Falcon?
Oh, he snuck it in there at the end, Jordan. A Blue Falcon is a buddy fucker for those that did not pick it up.
With a wingspan.
That is what it is. And when you make things difficult for your fellow soldiers, airmen, marines, any of those things, seamen, then that's what they call you.
Space cadets in their life.
So I just you know, I mean, kudos. I just want to bring it into everybody's light, the context of the pressure that you must have been experiencing in there, John. So way to stick it out, man.
And I mean, I think this is probably time to heap a little bit of praise on John, man.
Yeah.
To have an officer, like somebody that you're reporting to, that is, you know, you're not relying on the E7, you know, the gunny or the sergeant first class to be like, hey, man, this is my guy's plight. Get the fuck off of him. You know, to have a real officer stand up in the breach and say, hey, you guys can all get fucked. These are my guys. And I mean, that's political suicide in terms of advancement.
However, that's fucking good leadership.
Damn right. That's number one, right? Like when you were coming up, like that was like, listen, when your guys are down or hurt or they need to change their fucking socks or eat or whatever it was like, all right, this is how we work. And it's like they just disregarded all of that kind of stuff. As you know, it was like, oh, this is what you're indoctrinated with in boot camp, and it makes everything, you know, glorious. In the real world, much like, you know, what you were told, you know, military and the DOD and combat and war and all that kind of what, you know, is by your school teachers, you know, what they don't tell you is, oh, in reality, a lot of the officers are going to do whatever they have to stay in the good graces of their superior officers so they get promoted, so that they can make that star or colonel someday, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So, for somebody,
it's also for receiving accolades, or like medals and shit,
and better duty assignments. You know, it's just the whole thing. So, John, I mean, I think I speak for a lot of us over here. Is kudos to you, man. Like to be that guy that's like wearing the brass, that's saying, "No, you guys can get fucked, and we're going to do things this way." I think that is absolutely some of the best leadership I've ever
heard. No, I appreciate it. And probably more than my leadership, was probably spite for that sergeant major. So I really didn't.
Fucking soft bitch.
I've been since I've gotten out, and I have a much like different story for why I was very like kind of blackpilled about the military and everything. But this was one of the first stories I had heard in a long time that made me really fucking proud to be a Green Beret, to share that with you. It was really motivating because I think we've done a very good job of laying out how the managerial class, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, how they get the managers of the system to go along with whatever their edicts are. I think we've done a very good job of laying that out and how many people went along with it. And here was the only guy that I know of that bucked the system and said, hell no, and did what was right. Like, look at all the perverse incentives that were built into this system for every leader, quote unquote, to do the wrong thing. And here is a guy that did the right thing. And I think his voice should be amplified by everybody. Everybody needs to go follow him, go support him and everything he's doing, because like, this is the dude that you want. And we need to break those perverse incentives and show people this is the right thing to do. This should be, you're probably going to hate this, John, because I'd hate it if somebody said it to me, but nobody would. Mm-hmm. You're a hero, man. You really are. And I really appreciate, truly, like, anything you need. Like, I'm here. I know all these guys and everybody listening. If we're still on YouTube, we're here to like help you, because it's just fucking awesome what you did. And you are such an outlier. I can't even comprehend or put it into words what the chances are of somebody doing this. It's amazing, and it's really fucking motivating.
No, I appreciate it. And I mean, I need to give all kudos to God, and it's just trying to do his will is what has given me the strength for it. And just even in being able to reach out and talk to different groups to try to keep humble, I've really been thinking about Luke 17, 6 to 10, which is a parable of a servant who goes out to work, and he's tending the sheep. He's out in the field. And the story is he comes back in, and Jesus says, which of you, when this guy comes back in, is going to say, hey, have a seat. I'm going to serve you food. I'm going to thank you. No, he's going to say, I'm going to sit down. You're going to serve me food. And when I'm done eating, then you can go on ahead and eat. And what is he going to say? Thank the servant after? Like, so you also, when you're done serving your master, say, I am a humble servant. I only did what was my duty. So I'm just trying to do what's my duty. It's nothing special. I'm very grateful to have that kind of grace and that conviction to do it. And there's other untold stories of hundreds of others that are doing the right thing, didn't have as much pressure, but I very much appreciate it. And just am trying to do that right thing and hope others are encouraged to do the same.
You know, the ironic thing is that good leaders like yourself, John, were a lot of the guys, I suspect over mm-hmm. the last 10 years or so are the kind of people who have been pushed out of the military. And what you have left is the bureaucrats. You have the politicians. You have the dudes that are just going to go along to get along. They're going to do whatever the fuck they're told. And in my opinion, hopefully it's not super questionable shit when it comes down to it.
Right.
And it saddens me, because to me, it's like they're just hollowing out the best part of the military.
Well, I don't want to say terrify. I think what should raise a lot of alarms is the fact that not only is that going on, but now you also have directives for dangling a carrot in front of people who are not Americans. So if you want to join the American mm-hmm. military, you want to work through your enlistment and get through it, you're going to be dangling the carrot of citizenship. So if you bring in people that don't know the culture, maybe don't know the language, that don't understand what the American military is all about, and you dangle that carrot, now you're talking about like, all right, what will these guys do to earn that citizenship, to be a part of the country that they've only maybe even heard about, how amazing and rich and fantastical it is, right? So
and what a lot of people who are civilians might not understand is the military is a very fraternal organization.
Yeah.
Right. The way it works is you got a bunch of young dudes who don't know shit. They all basically have their heads completely up their ass. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. Right. And it takes guys who are a little bit farther down the road, who have a little bit more experience, a little more maturity, to take these guys and be like, hey guys, we're going to get you guys squared away. We're going to help you. Yeah. But when you take all the good leaders and you take them out, then you've got who knows what, and all of these young guys who just don't know any better, right?
Yeah.
And that to me is not a very good recipe.
Yeah.
And what Al just described in the military is happening like in the FBI, in police forces. It's happening in everything that the government touches. And to tie this into Bitcoin, it's only possible because of the fiat system, because they're able to keep printing what people in society believe is the lifeblood to make them successful, right? As mm-hmm. long as they can keep printing these dollars, that's why we get these perverse incentives. And that's why I believe that Bitcoin, quote unquote, fixes this, is because we're taking the power of the printing press away from the government, and we can realign these incentives. And part of what we're doing now, I believe, is we are right here in this show now, and everything we do as Bitcoin veterans and everything that John's out there doing is we are recreating society in the way that we want to see it. We're doing that. Like, Bitcoin hasn't like taken over. It's not like the standard yet. We're not under the Bitcoin standard yet, but that's like part of it. But part of it is like the societal aspect of seeing what is right, amplifying messages like this, and creating the society that we want our children to grow up in. And that is almost more important than even like the Bitcoin, but you couple that with the power that Bitcoin can do by taking away the power of the printing press.
Well, and Jordan, to lever up on that a little bit, like for anybody that's listening, or even like John, as far as like to really kind of push the justification for Jordan's claim here a little bit, is to consider how, so most average citizens, whether veteran, soldier or not, they conflate two different forms of inflation. There's price inflation, and then there's inflation through currency debasement. Typically what you see as far as price inflation is, like, you could think of it like the stock market going up or the value of an asset going up. That could be price inflation. But what we're really getting at is currency debasement, where we're seeing how, for example, over in a 2-year span, we printed 40% of the US dollar, the currency that's ever been in existence
in 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you have soldiers like PV1s, PV2s that are only making $30,000 a year, something like that. Yes. And then you have all this money flood the system, and then all of a sudden all the prices of all the goods are going up because you didn't change the number of goods. You just changed the number of units that were circulating through the system. So they're going to fill up that gap in order to bring up the cost of everything. And then, so you have all these soldiers that are soldiers and or civilians that are not earning more money, but the cost of everything is going up because the number of units that are circulating through the system are greater. So they're not earning more. Everything costs more. And then you have this situation where then they're either taking on additional work or they're taking on additional duties to try and cover down that gap. There's only so many hours in a day. And then you can almost weaponize that system to pressure people into doing what you want them to do. Like take an inoculation that doesn't do anything but weaken the citizenry and the soldiers and not be capable of physically performing. And that's not even talking about any of the downstream cognitive effects when you've got all these fibrous thrombosis or thrombotic structures that are forming into the arteries and everything. And so the value here is to be able to use the Bitcoin asset as a way of, because they can't just get in and take control of it and be able to print however many they want. It's like you can keep debasing your currency all you want, but it's going to end up filling up into Bitcoin just because of the fact that Bitcoin is perfectly scarce. It's finite. It's not being able to be in control by them. And the fact that you can't hack it because it's behind SHA-256 encryption. And you've got, I haven't done the math on how much energy is actually defending the network, but it's at least a couple, I think it's 16 terawatt hours of power. It's so defensive. And the fact that they can't print it. So you have all the capability of just this flood of currency to be able to just get soaked up by it. So it almost behooves our soldiers to at least have a little bit of exposure to it, to the point of being able to defend themselves as a wealth asset. Because if we run into a situation where we get into any form of combat, whether it's kinetic, cyber, air, whatever, and we have soldiers that aren't capable of acting as they need to, because, and then we get some sort of political element that is within our own armed forces that is saying, no, you guys can't resist this. You need to stand down or you're not getting a paycheck. That is a massive problem. You want to talk about huge threat vector.
Yeah. So, a big reason why the Roman Empire collapsed. I mean, there's many factors just with any empire, but they debased the gold so much by adding in non-gold elements to the coin that the soldiers no longer accepted payment. And eventually the US dollar is going to become so worthless that soldiers don't want to accept it anymore. How do you prop up the world empire without being able to funnel in that US dollar? Or you can funnel it in, but nobody wants it anymore.
I think you're kind of dancing around this, right? When we look at where we want to head as veterans and Bitcoiners, and really just being part of the Bitcoin crowd, is this, you guys have touched on it multiple times now, is the law of scarcity, right? When you're talking about the law of scarcity, when you need guys, especially on a payroll, that you're trying to project lethality, right? At the bottom, at the end of the day, the bottom line is, how lethal is your force? If you can just print money out of thin air, then you can start to chase all of these phantoms that are out there. These ridiculous things that have nothing to do with lethality.
Yeah.
And what Bitcoin does is it steers that incentive structure back towards using the finite resources that you have towards the absolute mission, the what you were set out with a purpose from the beginning to do. And in this case, for the military, that's project lethality, hopefully within only our shores most of the time, and unless, you know, some really terrible stuff has gone down, but like that's it. And so when you get to chasing these phantoms of, oh yeah, you know what, we need to go out here and put money into any of these organizations that developed quote unquote inoculations, like that doesn't happen. You cannot, first and foremost, you're not going to have anybody go, oh, you know, I think this is a good idea where we're going to send all this money here. Secondly, you're not going to have an entire network of army or just military officers saying you have to do this. First of all, that doesn't exist. And even if it, let's just say for some reason it did exist, you're not going to have military officers going, you know what, maybe this is the way we should all go. Because when you have that law of scarcity, you have, you know, this decentralized nature where people are using anything and everything they can to its maximum ability for maximum return versus this waste and fraud and abuse that's been carried out, you have a much cleaner, decentralized, stronger force that can carry out the mission that was originally projected in the first place.
That's an awesome point.
We've all just given autism dumps on John, and he needs to process it a little bit.
I'm
going to give one more.
Sure.
Actually, and then I'm going to give you one more.
Let's fucking break his brain.
Yeah, let's get questions out of him if he has any. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to go first, Alex, or?
Sure. Okay. So I agree with everything Shane said. When you have a dishonest monetary system, what it really does is it skews all the incentives, excuse all the behaviors. So you no longer have a meritocratic system. On the battlefield, there's a calculus of warfare. You are basically plotting how you are going to project force in a way that's going to minimize losses in human lives to your own people, maximize losses to the enemy, right? When you have that money that is basically screwing with everybody's ability to measure, that's when you start getting off deep in the weeds and you're no longer focused on that. The last thing I was going to say is, and this is one of the most important parts of Bitcoin, and this is one of the reasons why there is a chance for this to upset the apple cart, so to speak, on this pathway of where our society is headed. And that is Bitcoin. It is the first truly unconfiscatable asset that we have ever seen in the history of mankind. All right. So your property can be taken from you. Historically speaking, bank accounts can be used against you to coerce you into certain types of behavior. They can dock your pay. They can garnish your pay. They can take money directly out of your bank account. If you're in the military, you get in trouble. They can dock your pay, right? They can control that. Right. Because Bitcoin is unconfiscatable, it's the first asset ever. Like dollars can be confiscated, your stocks can be confiscated. They can take stuff from your brokerage accounts, your retirement accounts, whatever the case may be. Everything in the history of mankind has always been confiscatable with using force. Okay. Bitcoin's the first thing we've ever seen that doesn't behave like that. Because you can literally create a wallet address, memorize 12 or 24 words, send Bitcoin to that, destroy the wallet, and the access to that Bitcoin now lives in your head. So somebody could come to you with force and say, Shane, you're going to give me your Bitcoin or I'm going to blow your head off. And Shane could have one or two responses. He could be like, okay, well, I don't want you to blow my head off, so here's the keys. You can have my Bitcoin. Or he can say, Alex, pound sand. Like, my kids know how to get my keys. Screw off.
Not right? Put all of his money in one wallet and have multiple wallets. Too. So when he's
So because of that, it actually flips the entire taxation system on its head. In 1913, when the Federal Reserve was created, they also passed another act which created income tax, which didn't exist prior to that. Right. If the money that you're storing your labor in is unconfiscatable, taxation now becomes voluntary. Oh, no. What do you mean? Like, we actually have to do a fucking good job as politicians or we don't get the money? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
So the price of, no. Price of Tomorrow? No, not Price of Tomorrow. What's the book? God, it was written in the 90s, and I should know the name of this thing, and I cannot pull it from memory.
Describe the book.
Anyway, we'll give you a minute to think about that. There's a lot of crayons involved here.
Maker's Mark, too.
That's it. That's the point. Like, it completely flips the taxation and the behavioral system and the economics of the behaviors completely upside down, which finally gives humanity a chance to reverse this sort of insidious corruption that's infected our nation.
Mm-hmm. The sovereign individual. Sorry.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Okay.
So now that we've broken you, John.
Yeah,
sure. I'm really interested to hear. And I think this is just an awesome thing to do, like, for the show too, is just like, what are your what is it that doesn't make sense to you? What are your hangups? Like, I hope that we can answer them, but as that says down there, John is big brain. So I think you can soak it up. And I truly want to know, like, cause I was there at one point, like, there were things that just, it wasn't clicking for me. And, so what is it?
Yeah. So would a balanced budget amendment solve a lot of these problems? If you could just get the budget back down to zero, if you don't print more money, I know that there's the problems where the government can then shut down your banking system, as we see with the Canadian truckers, things like that. But I guess there's that. And then it's trying to switch everyone over to Bitcoin as a system. It would be hard to get a whole lot of people to kind of get into that. And if it's only valuable insofar as everyone else or the people you need to interact with see it as valuable. So is that just like a little step where everyone takes a little bit of their amount of money they have and then puts it in slowly, starts interchanging with it, and then hopefully it grows?
So lot of reasons, no. Jordan, if you want to go ahead first. And
I just want to take the first part of your question is, you know, if we did a balanced budget bubble, okay, well, what's stopping them from going back to that? Like, the country started out with a balanced budget and a very minimal tax base. And so what happens when the next war or emergency happens? If it's something that was so simple to stop by writing it into law on a piece of paper, then it's just as easy to write a new law on a piece of paper to get rid of that. As humanity, we need something that even humans cannot get control of. It literally would take everyone in Bitcoin to come to a consensus to agree to up the amount of Bitcoin that there is. Mm-hmm. And why would anybody do that knowing it's going to devalue what they currently own?
Okay.
Yeah. And just to maybe even a more simple understanding of just the different thoughts of economics, right? You've got the Keynesian school and you have the Austrian school, and the Austrian school is based on savings, right? Is what you can save today, you have in store for tomorrow so that you can leverage it. For the day's work. So in a Keynesian system, debt is the commodity, right? So when you're in a debt-based type of economy, Keynesian economy for that matter, what you have to do is you have to spend more money faster over time. And unless we went back to a gold standard, I really mean this, like, even if you went back to that gold standard, you're going to have to make the same mistakes again, because they unpegged from a gold standard because of convertibility, because they were greedy. Politicians are greedy. They're always going to be greedy. And what you get in trouble with gold is just being able to move it fast enough around the world in a global economy. So they went to a species of paper and they unpegged it from gold, what they said was, hey, listen, this is our debt-based fiat system. And over time, what we're going to do is we're going to start very high with an interest rate. And what we're going to account for is dropping that interest rate over time, a little bit at a time, because I think we started out at somewhere in the 20% after Nixon unpegged us, and then Jimmy Carter had this terrible time, right? Like, everybody blames Jimmy Carter for the 70s and how shitty it was and how gas was crazy and, you know, home mortgage, you know, lending was in the 20% and nobody could afford a home. And in reality, those were all consequences of going off of the gold standard and going to a fiat standard. So what do? They started inflating currency right away. Like, that was a default. And then they started printing more money over time. And so now what you've gotten to 50 years later is the point where now people are seeing exactly how astronomical this, you know, for lack of a better term, this is hyperinflation, right? So Now they're starting to see that, you know, like, they're debasing our currency this fast. And the thing is that they can't stop. If you're looking forward at what they're proposing, Janet Yellen even said, you know, we should probably go ahead and float $50 trillion for the national debt. And if that's the case, then right now, I think we're running at $1 trillion of debt for every 3 months. Now what happens is you get into a situation where your debt is greater than GDP, and no nation has ever walked away from that. No empire has ever survived, you know, something like that. So that's where we're at in terms of printing money faster. They have to do it. And that's the crux of a Keynesian society. No matter what they do in DC, who is all first and foremost bought by fiat money, they will take the votes, they'll take the re-election campaign funds, and they'll just continue to perpetuate this until that system is done. So really what we're at is a continuum, is how many people, and that's the mission, is how many people can we get in this, you know, time now, is to go from, hey, you know what, I'd rather trade my fiat, I'd rather, you know, stop subjecting myself to the banks that could possibly control us, and now move into this parallel economy that seems to actually be doing extremely well, and over time is the most asymmetric asset that humanity's ever seen. So yeah, quick answer, no. A balanced budget amendment is never going to do anything.
John, I actually have a question for you. It's sure. It's not necessarily rhetorical, but it's more Socratic. When it comes to getting the politicians to balance the budget, how effective is it to get people to give up their power over something that gives them effectively infinite power and control over, like, an entire country?
Right. Yeah. It's almost impossible to try to get them to concede that. That's where I wonder is it like, what comes first, the chicken or egg or something like that? Mm-hmm. And do you need a virtuous person or a virtuous society in order to accept Bitcoin, or is Bitcoin going to influence it? And I'm an Aristotelian kind of Thomistic as far as philosophy goes, and think that you can actually make laws to make people virtuous, right? Like, you can't, like, legalize people to the point where they're going to, that's okay, we can discuss it. You can't like enforce it to a great extent that what you're doing in the bedroom, what you can't control, but there are some things that are just good for society that you can generally try to encourage, and then things that are not, that you just, you just don't.
Yeah.
I 100% agree that there are things that are good for society that we should promote. I do not think that the government can ever be the conduit to do that. I think it is society. I think it's really just at a local level. It's your neighbors, it's your friends, it's your community.
Sure. Yeah.
That can influence that, because even if what was coming out of DC was good for you,
right,
they don't really know what your local situation is. Well,
yeah.
But your neighbors do. Your neighbors understand, like, yeah, like John made a bad decision, you know, like, whatever it was, economically or what, he made an immoral decision, but I understand that, like, he's going through a hard time right now. Like, he just lost his job through no fault of his own. His car just broke down. Like, he was struggling and he made a poor choice, but I know that John is a good dude. Whereas that coming down from DC, or even like,
so that's where I need to preface it. Let me preface that I believe in subsidiarity, which is solving the problems at the local level to the best extent that you can. If it's something you can do on your own, you need to do it on your own. If it's something that your family can do for you, your family should do for it. The federal government should not be doing anything at all that the state can do. And the state shouldn't be doing anything at all that the city or the town or that smallest situation can do. And just inflating the federal government is just a huge problem because, yeah, DC doesn't know what the hell. And especially the, you know, New World Order, not talking about the greatest wrestling faction of all time, but founded by the immortal Hulk Hogan, but not talking about that one, but they have no idea what, I mean, I don't think they have humanity's best interest in mind, period. But yeah, I'm not saying
I care about everybody in this group right now. And I don't think that I could tell any one of you what's best for you to do. And
right.
And I truly care about you and I want what's best for you, but I couldn't do it. And so even at the community level, sometimes you run into some resistance, but I agree with everything you said, John. Like I don't have any beef or argument with that.
Right. So I'm just going to jump in here. One of the cool things about Bitcoin is that it actually creates the law that then encourages virtuous behavior from humanity. It takes the power away from governments to change the rules because that is what they do. It's been proven throughout history that when we have a fiat system in place, the nature of that fiat system will always move towards debasement of the currency and the removal of power from the hands of the citizens and the transference of that power into the hands of governments. And history has shown us they cannot be trusted because they're people, and it's just how it's going to be. And the power will eventually corrupt people in general if they are given that much of it, and they won't remove it. And so every fiat system that has ever existed always moves towards debasement because it's going to feed into that power. One of the cool things about Bitcoin is that the debasement, it's not possible for it to happen because, you know, a Bitcoin is worth a Bitcoin, and that's what it will always be worth. And what happens is when that debasement happens and then that currency falls, the trust in that currency is going to go away, and then, you know, it's not going to exist. And what's going to happen is the natural gravity is going to move people towards the only real money that is in place. And that's when that adoption happens that you were referring to. And it's a great question, and it's one that I've had myself is, you know, how do we get everybody on board with this thing? Okay, if they can just do, you know, if they can just go over here and do this, then how are we going to, you know, tell people about this, and how are we going to get them on board? But the natural gravity, the natural flow of things is going to move towards real money when the existing flawed fiat system, as it continues to destruct upon itself. So, that's what I'm going to leave it at with that.
Money don't wait.
Yeah, I think that's where you put different rule structures in place that can help humans flourish to a better extent. And it seems as though everything I've heard from Bitcoin, it's a better standard than centralized government printing out money, being able to spend it on their own while it trickles down to other people. So the price of goods just continues to inflate and you're just working. And I mean, things should be cheaper, right? We have what kind of industrialized system where it's just cheaper, easier, takes less manual labor, less material, more efficient. Like, why are things going higher in expense? Why shouldn't these different advancements in technology made it where you can work for 5 years, save what you need, and be good to go? It's because we're inflating the shit out of stuff, and it helps those who are able to then print it out. So I'm all about that aspect of it, and I'll continue to see how Bitcoin does with it. I'll continue to try to fight and, you know, vote for people who want smaller government and maybe put some of my assets into Bitcoin too. But yeah.
Let me attack this from one other angle. And I say this, I'm not Catholic, but I say this as a Christian. Think about how the separation of church and state was vital to Western society. I think that it was very key to, because I think the church was very inappropriately influenced by having so much control over the state and how everything was governed and who ruled and who and how they taxed things. And I think once you separated then you got, okay, then you got government doing its thing and church doing what it's supposed to do, like trying to reach the souls of people. And I think in the same way, we need to have a separation of state and money, because as long as the state controls things that can be so easily influenced and bastardized for completely against what its purpose is, like how many wars were fought in the name of the church that weren't necessary, but it was more because of the power that corrupted it. And I think the same thing is happening with money. I don't know. Maybe you have a different take on that. That was not the appropriate.
We're kind of jumping back into my story, which is after I put my refrat packet in, I had to talk to full bird colonel on my exit brief. And as I was asking him basic questions, do you think that this was legal? Do you realize this needed an FDA approved shot to be legal? Have you done anything to look into vaccine injured? Have you heard of Nuremberg Code? I was asked, too much ideology is bad. You heard of the Crusades. So sorry, that's a little bit of tangent, but now that we're going to the Crusades here. So I mean,
that's a bold question. Have you heard of the Nuremberg?
Yeah, that's a, when you mentioned that, I was like, ooh, bro.
No, I kind of raised the temperature a little
bit. That's a serious allegation.
It's not an allegation. It's a question. Yeah. It's a question.
Well, I mean, this is totally a Nuremberg violation, but yes.
Yeah,
agreed. So, I mean, I'd probably have a different take on the involvement that the church and state should have. I mean, it has to be limited in different extents, but I understand where the analogy is coming from. But yeah, I think that you need to limit the power of whatever institution that's over you. Like, people are autonomous to the extent that they should be able to make whatever choices they should. They should be pursuing human flourishing and the good. And it's that local society that's figuring out what that kind of human good and flourishing is. But I think that you can see patterns throughout the world. And I'm a big kind of natural law guy. That just means that you can observe what's right and wrong throughout all cultures. There's a reason why everything tries to maintain its own existence, like, or else, you know, it would just be normal to just off yourself, right? Just having families, procreating, education. No one thinks, hey, you're so dumb, good for you. That doesn't. So these kind of like normative things across society and trying to do whatever laws assist with it. And I definitely having less, the central government having less power is 100% needed.
Mm. John, right. You're a Bitcoiner. You just don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you just mentioned something really cool. And then I think we're going to move on, but, how the way that Bitcoin sets people free from the, I'm going to use the word slavery, to the grind of having just to barely make it and survive. Okay. The way that Bitcoin can set people free from that machine, what it does is it frees them to pursue those greater mm-hmm. meanings in life. It frees them to pursue that renaissance that we all want to shift humanity back towards. It frees us to focus less on the things that drag us down and focus more on the things that elevate us as a people in general. And that's the beautiful thing about it, really. And this is kind of, the bigger picture of it. It's more than just money. It's more than just an investment. And I think, you know, we're all in the same place with that. But I mean, it truly sets us free to showcase the very best that humanity has and for us to elevate as a species of people. And, I don't know, man, to me, that's just awesome. I do have one question for you, John. I saw in an article that, there are people that are taking action to, if there's a switch in parties in the White House, that they're talking about reinstating service members that were tossed out. What do you think the reaction would be to something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's insane that a lot of the population thinks that people who refuse the shot are just dangerous people. And there's been just a hyperbolization of just a demonization of one side and the other, and especially the left thinking of those who are just not jabbed as being terrible. So I'm sure a lot of people would be upset, but that's what needs to happen. So what I'm doing right now, even in this interview, is trying to raise as much awareness on the problems with regards to the shot mandate. And it goes way beyond the military. It goes into just government control in so many different sectors. But I'm just trying to raise awareness right now that it was illegal, that there was no FDA approved shot. The government did not have the power to make us do that, that it was immoral. The shots used aborted fetal cells and they were coercing people against their will, which you should never do. And it's unsafe. Like, people are just getting sick. They're dying. We have the VAERS data, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. We have the DMED data, the military's medical database that's being messed with. So I'm trying to raise that awareness in order to pressure Congress to have congressional hearings in order to get accountability and make amendments to the National Defense Authorization Act. And that's something where, even if we don't have the White House having a congressional majority for Republicans, there is some say that can happen. So there's a number of service members who have helped to draft up these NDAA proposals. So it will include bringing people back in. It will include trying to give them bonuses, fix the wrongs that have happened to get them to the school. So I didn't get through my whole story, but I lost out on the opportunity to get a grad degree in philosophy and teach philosophy and an ethics course, ironically, at the U.S. military's academy. I mean, the irony is just rich on everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we need to do that, but we need an investigation, and we need to see, what did Lloyd Austin know? What did other military flag officers know? And I mean, because the problem is that the laws are already there, and we broke them. Like, you weren't supposed to force people to take an EUA product, but they did. And I mean, just not even getting into that to the story, but like, we ended in September of 21. When we got back, we all got counseled, and every single one of us more or less told the commander, hey, there's no EUA or FDA product. Like, how is this legal? And he's just like, I don't know. And we talked to the group doctor and group medic, and they were just absolutely useless as well. just saying they're medically interchangeable. And we're bringing up reports from military whistleblowers, and they're just saying, oh yeah, that woman, she's weird. It's like, great, great answer to, you know, her whistleblower claim. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what can we do, and what can our listeners do to support your mission?
Yeah, they can follow me and follow a number of different individuals that are trying to raise this awareness and try to share my story, share other stories. They can get involved locally in their elections, pressuring their congressional leaders, especially if they're in the House Armed Service Committee, if they're in the weaponization of the federal government, to say, hey, the shot mandate for the military was illegal. It was immoral. It was unsafe, and it's destroying readiness. And the readiness effect, people don't understand. You have the 8 to 10K who were kicked out, right? And then you have individuals such as myself who are choosing to leave, even though we survived the mandate because of the pressure. You have guys who are choosing to medically retire early, especially in the spec ops community, because it's not worth it for them to stay in. You have the moral injury that's happened to every single service member, and we have the recruiting issue. So it's just a disaster. So we need to really... I guess some people have talked about like an Obama style removing of leadership and putting in whatever ones that are good and citizens and patriots. So there's just a lot to be done. And it's not just with regards to the military, but that's just my slice of the pie and my line of effort right now.
John, I think we'll start tying a bow on this thing. If you guys got any parting shots out there, I'll leave it open. Mike, Jordan, Gabe, Alex, any short closing remarks?
I gotta say that as far as the discussion that we've had here today, like with regards to just like the Bitcoin stuff with you, John, it doesn't, like, personally, I'm not going to speak for the rest of the group, but it doesn't matter if you end up coming around to liking Bitcoin or not. Like, that's not part of our mission here. It's like, it first and foremost, it's your money, it's your time, it's your effort. You choose exactly what you want to do with it. But what I will say that I think that I can say, for like, as far as speaking for the rest of the group, is if you ever have any questions or you need help with anything, like, all you have to do is reach out. We also have a pretty energetic and passionate group of other Bitcoiner veterans that are, I'm sure, more than happy to be able to help and contribute efforts or resources to anything that you might need.
Awesome.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I'll say thank you so much for having me on. This has been fantastic. Loving the Bitcoin discussion, and I'll definitely consider putting some of my assets into it. And even should I not get into that, it's good to have this kind of dialogue and to point out problems with the fiat system, point out problems with centralized government, because even having a buddy of mine, so another SF captain buddy of mine who got me into real estate, talked to me about Bitcoin and things like that. So just hearing about that helps expose so many of the problems that people are just not even aware of. And just that knowledge is power. And if you don't understand what the problem is, how are you ever going to come up with a solution? So even if I don't decide that solution, or other listeners don't decide the solution is Bitcoin, it will help open people's minds to consider other solutions, or just to fix some of the problems we have. So I appreciate you having me on, and appreciate you letting me share my story.
Yeah. And specifically, one more thing I will add as far as a parting shot, like this conversation in particular with you, John, is also going to help just really point out and break kind of like the surface tension with regards to like the mass psychosis of like, guys, like government is not some benevolent, omnipotent, omniscient being, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a group of people that are just as dumb and misguided as the rest of us. Like, we have to like really just look at everything with a massive grain of salt. So I agree with you. Absolutely, man.
John, thank you for all of us. I know a lot of the guys in the crowd here have been really, I mean, they've thoroughly enjoyed this. And really, you're our first guest. This is episode 11. So one for the books, John Frankman. Hey,
thanks for popping our cherry. I got one cherry left. It's about to get popped. Go.
Private Joker.
Yeah. All right.
Leave it to a seventh group guy.
When we're looking at all this, you know, I can't help but think at the end of this, the government, whatever it touches, it destroys. Like everything that it touches. If it wants to do one thing, whether it's poverty or terrorism or drugs, every time they are in charge of it, homelessness, for God's sakes,
you get more
of it, right? And the fact that they're in charge of money and they can touch money and create money out of thin air. We're sitting here now in this ridiculous, you know, bizarro world that is the antithesis of everything that I think all of us ever thought the United States was ever about, what we were led to believe. And I think what we really carry in our hearts as what just a good ethos as a man or a woman should be. And so to the idea now that we have this opportunity to go out and remove them from touching money, from them being involved in money, from them being able to manipulate money, to have to play by the same rules after running deficit after deficit after deficit and running this country into $31 trillion in debt and $200+ trillion in unfunded liability. We've got the opportunity before us to do something incredible that the species has never done. John, I can't thank you enough for kind of highlighting, you know, how bad a fiat system can be, especially in the hands of people who are looking at getting promoted, and drawing this really amazing distinction between where we should be, where we as, you know, these guys in this veteran community, a lot of times as community leaders, guys that have, you know, looked at death in the face and said, you know what, bring it, you know, to be able to take that into the masses and take this message that, look, you don't belong in our lives. These people have, you know, the autonomy, the self-determination to decide what's best for them and their family. And really, if they're peaceful people, leaving them alone, I think this is that message that is going to absolutely catapult, you know, this movement, especially led by people in this community, especially to the next level. So, John, from all of us here, Bitcoin Vets, especially the crowd and all of us here that are hosts, thank you very much for being our first guest, for your tremendous story, for standing in the gap for not only your men, but, you know, as pride for yourself as well, man. So I think this is a great reflection on the Green Beret and a real testament to the warrior spirit. So for all of us here at Bitcoin Vets, thank you guys for tuning in. Go out down there, like, smash, do all the things that, you know, help this show grow. We've got some announcements coming up at Pacific Bitcoin here in a little over a month now that I think is going to be really awesome for this community. Outside of that guy's, the rest of you guys, Gabe, Jordan, Mike, Alex, thank you guys for doing this with us. We're going to sign out now, but I think before we do, I think somebody mentioned the once great.
And what you gonna do when Hulkamania and all
Bitcoin
the world run wild on you?
Tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. right here in Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens. Don't you dare miss this one.
We'll see you guys next week somewhere around, 7 o'clock on a Wednesday, maybe. Until then, peace.
Later, guys.